Brother Donahue and Thrasher and ladies and gentlemen, I will first read the proposition and spend a few moments defining it and then get into my first argument. The proposition is, and I guess I won't read it, I don't have a copyright here, and I will just define it. What I have here. The New Testament teaches that a woman must wear an artificial covering while praying. Let's stop and start over. Is that all right, Mark? I read the wrong proposition. All right. Brother Donahue, Brother Thrasher, ladies and gentlemen, I want to first read the proposition and then define it and get to the first argument. New Testament teaches that long hair is the only head covering women must have, even while praying. It's a claim that it needs very little definition. I want all to understand that by the New Testament, I mean Matthew through Revelation, with a special emphasis on 1 Corinthians chapter 11. By teach, I mean it reveals the mind of God by long hair. And this is a key term, I think. I mean hair that is neither shaved nor shorn. Hair that fully covers and that is long enough to distinguish woman from a man who has hair short enough to satisfy the passage. By his the only, I mean there's no other necessary, even when praying. By head covering, I mean something that fully covers the head. By women, I have reference to females, and in this context, especially with reference to Christians. By must have, I mean it's absolutely necessary, and by even while praying, I mean that no other covering is necessary when praying. We need a very close study of the context to try to determine whether the proposition that I have read is true. And thus we need to determine what is the focus or the main force of the passage, the subject matter, know what it's talking about. What one determines to be the main focus of the passage is going to determine what he concludes about the covering. For example, if one looks at the passage and he sees that prophecy, which is a spiritual gift, is mentioned, and from that concludes that Paul is regulating spiritual gifts, he's going to conclude that the covering is when a woman is prophesying or practicing spiritual gifts. But another looks at the passage and sees that Corinthian custom is mentioned. And if he concludes that that's the main thrust of the passage, he's going to conclude that the woman is to have the covering that's enjoined because of Corinthian custom. Another looks at the passage and finds that the assembly is not mentioned at all, but because praying and prophesying are, he thinks it's talking about in the assembly, he's going to conclude that the reason the woman is to have the covering is because she's in the assembly to worship. And if anyone takes either of these views, he naturally is going to conclude that the covering is artificial because it's just when practicing spiritual gifts or under Corinthian custom or when in assembly. Then we look at the passage again and we see that praying is mentioned, I believe, three times. And if one concludes that the main focus of the passage is praying, he's going to conclude that the covering is in regard to that main focus, and therefore, when and only when women are praying, they are to have this covering on. If one concludes this, he's naturally going to conclude the covering is artificial, that she can put on when she prays and take off when she's not praying. If I believed any of those was the main thrust of the passage, I logically would be forced to conclude that the covering is an artificial covering in verses 4, 5, 6, 7, 4, 5, 6, and 7. I do not believe that either of these is the main force or focus of the passage, and neither does Brother Fan. I ask him a question in regard to that tonight, and he says the covering is the main focus of the passage, and that subjection is used in order to make the point that woman is to be covered. If covering is the main focus of the passage, I still don't know how it would help Pat's view, because in the passage she's told to be covered when praying, she's told to be covered when prophesying, and she's told to be covered all the time. But that's his problem, not mine. I do not believe that any of the things that I've mentioned is the main focus of the passage, simply because of the context of the passage. We want to look at the passage now, and I'll try to show you why I believe, so you can consider it and come to your own conclusion, that subjection is the broad subject of the passage, and woman being in subjection to man is emphasized then with a special emphasis upon a woman having some kind of a covering on her head as a token that she's in subjection to man. And that last point is the point that is more fully developed. The woman having a token upon her head, some covering as a token showing she's in subjection to man. You have to determine from the context what that token is. And we're not going to try to determine from sentences that I make up that I think are parallel or from Old Testament passages, but from the context what the covering is. And so we look at the context. But I would have you know that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of woman is the man, and the head of Christ is God. That is the way that it starts. Introducing the broad subject of subjection, God who is over Christ, who is over man, who is over woman. I want to pause there in reading and get back to one of the questions I asked Pat, the same one, with a little further elaboration upon his answer. Give you his full answer. He says that the covering is the main focus of the passage, but then he says, subjection is the main, though not the only reason given for use of the covering. Digest that. Yes, sir. Covering is the main focus, but subjection is the main reason given for the covering. I believe subjection is the main reason given for the covering. Not the only reason specifically, but every other reason is in relation to subjection and can be listed as a subheading under subjection. So subjection in a broad sense could be said to be the reason. He says the point of the passage is to encourage women, woman's use, and the man's non-use of the covering. The point of the passage is to encourage woman's use and man's non-use. The main reason for the covering is subjection. But the point of the passage is to cover, I mean, to encourage woman's use and man's non-use. So the main point of the passage is different from the reason of the passage, it seems to me, from that. The passage keeps saying, be covered or uncovered, and then giving reasons for that, like in verses 4, 5, 7, and 13. Verses 4, 5, praying and prophesying. 13, to praying. 7, because she's the glory of man, or the verses that is listed. Now then, Brother Pat recognizes that the main reason woman's to be covered is because of the subjection that the passage teaches. He then concludes that subjection is only secondary to develop the covering point, whereas I want to show you from the scripture that the covering is used to develop the subjection point, which is the main point. Reading on, every man praying or prophesying having his head covered dishonors his head, but every woman praying or prophesying with her head uncovered dishonors her head, and that is even all if she were shaven. Pause there now. We're going to go pretty slowly. We've got three speeches to get this in, and I'm going to try not to get in a rush. Ask yourself the question, what is the main focus here, the covering or the subjection? He said, every man praying or prophesying, having his head covered, dishonors his head. Looks to me like he's saying that he ought to have his head covered, ought to have his head uncovered, so he will not dishonor his head. And that's subjection. He's under Christ, his head. If he has his head covered when he prays, he dishonors his head. So the point is not covering. You use subjection to develop that. The point is you be subject to your head, and he uses covering to develop that. You can see that in verse 4, can't you? But every woman that prays or prophesies with her head uncovered dishonors her head, and that is even all wounds if she were shaved. Again, you see that the main focus is, do not dishonor your head, and help the covering old women when you pray as a token that you're not dishonoring your head. That's what the passage is plain to say. Then verse 6, for if the woman be not covered, let her also be shorn. But if it be a shame for a woman to be shorn, let her also be covered. For, Brother Floyd Thompson used to say, when we see for or therefore in the passage, we'd better stop and see what it's there for. So we're going to stop and see what it's there for. He says that a woman ought not to be covered, beg your pardon, for if a woman be not covered, let her also be shorn, but if it's shame for her to be shorn or shaven, let her be covered, for, building upon that, a man indeed ought not to cover his head, for as much as he's the image and glory of God, but the woman's the glory of man. Again, he uses the covering to make the main point that the man is to be subject to God, to the Lord Jesus Christ, his head, and the woman is to be the glory of the man. He goes on to point out that the woman is of the man. The woman was created for the man, and for this reason she ought to have a covering upon her head, and also because of the angels, whatever that means. And then after that, he asked a question about the woman being covered. And please understand that, and dear brethren and friends, I didn't say he asked a question about the covering. He asked a question about the woman being covered, and he answered that question about the woman being covered or having a covering on her head with long hair. Does not even nature itself teach you that if a man have long hair, it's a shame to him, but if a woman have long hair, it's a glory to her, for her hair is given her for a covering. It's one of the few things that we have proven, both by inspiration and by nature, and I believe nature in this passage simply has reference to that which people learn because of their surroundings or the customs round about them. I believe this makes reference to Corinthian custom. And so Paul says, I only have proof to you by revelation that a man ought to be subject to Christ, the woman ought to be subject to the man, and she ought to have the covering that I'm enjoining on her head as a token she's in subjection to man, because it is revelation. And then he makes an appeal to them from a common sense standpoint and says, even your society shows the same thing, that if a man has long hair, it's a shame to him. And I can remember when our society showed that. Not today, but I can remember when it did. And I can remember society when women cut their hair like mine, it was a shame. I can even remember a song, "Why Do You Bob Your Hair, Girls? It's an Awful Shame." Not in our society today, but it was in Corinth, and that's what Paul's appealing to here. And Paul says, even your society, nature, your custom show that what I'm telling you is recognized by the world in which you live. Don't recognize the world in which we live today, but it was the world in which they live. That's what I'm saying. Then he says, but if a woman have long hair, it's a glory to her, for her hair is given her for a covering. That believes as strongly as I do that the woman is to have the long hair, and the long hair is given her for a covering. And I think he believes it's a shame for a man to have long hair, that Pat thinks that he sees two coverings here. He thinks verses 4, 5, 6, 7, and 13 are talking about an artificial covering. But he thinks verse 15, verses 14 and 15 are talking about hair. I would like for you to show us plainly from the context when you come up that where you make that distinction and how you make that switch from one covering to another. If the Apostle Paul had argued for 9 verses in regard to the Lord's Supper, and 5 times in those 9 verses made reference to unleavened bread and fruit of the vine, and then answered by saying, unleavened bread and fruit of the vine are given for your supper. I wonder if we could conclude that coffee and donuts was the supper he'd been talking about in the previous 9 verses. I think if it talked about the Lord's Supper and mentioned unleavened bread and fruit of the vine 4 times, and asked a question about taking unleavened bread and fruit of the vine, and answered with unleavened bread and fruit of the vine, that we conclude he is talking about unleavened bread and fruit of the vine in the previous 9 verses. Just so, Paul did talk about the covering that the woman is to have as a token of her subjection to man for 9 verses. He asked a question about her having that covering. He mentioned this 4 times before he asked the question, her. He named her in the question, which made the 5th time, that he answered by saying, if a man hath long hair, it's a shame to him, but if a woman hath long hair, it's a glory to her. Looks to me like Paul's been talking about her all along, especially since in the argument that he began making, he is contrasting shaven and shorn with being covered. And Pat readily admits that there's a lot more consistency in contrasting shaven and shorn with long hair than in contrasting shaven and shorn with a veil or an artificial cover. So my friends, I believe by looking at the context, we have seen that the main focus of the passage is subjection, specifically developing the idea that woman is to have a covering on her head as a token she's in subjection to man. And he shows that she is to have this subjection to put herself forth as the glory of man. And furthermore, he shows that she's to have this token of subjection on her head when praying. He shows that she was to have this token on her head when prophesying, when women had the gift of prophecy. And he shows that she's to have this covering on her head all the time. Her long hair is given her for a covering, and her long hair is a glory to her. So just as long as she is in subjection to man, she is to have this token of subjection on her head when praying, when prophesying, and let me see the chart that I have on top there, please. When praying, when prophesying, and all the time. Look at this chart again, if you will, please. We showed it last night. What's under consideration? Forgive, Matthew 11:25. Why? We want God's forgiveness. When? When praying, that passage says, and it's all that passage says. But from other passages, we learn that we're to forgive when a sinner repents, and we're to forgive all the time when a sinner repents. Then, what? Be covered. Verses 5 and 6 in 1 Corinthians 11. Why? To honor man as his head, verse 7. When? When praying, when prophesying, and all the time. Verse 5, verse 5, and verse 15. Let me have the next chart, please. So I have shown that woman is to be covered because she is to have on her head that which the Holy Spirit enjoined that she have as a token of her subjection to man. Man is to be uncovered to honor his head, and because he's in the image and glory of God. Is man to honor his head and be in the image and the glory of God when he prays? Yes. So as to be uncovered when he prays. Is he to honor his head with the image and glory of God all the time? Yes. So it's to be uncovered with the covering that's enjoined all the time. Woman is to be covered, that is, honor her head, because she was created for man, because she's to honor man, and because she's the glory of man. Is woman to honor her head all the time? Was she created for man all the time? Is she the glory of man all the time? Are these things just true of woman when she's praying? Such as be covered to honor her head, because she was created for men and to be the glory of men, and these things are true all the time, then the covenant that's enjoined is obligatory upon her all the time. When praying, and I never have denied that. When prophesying, when they could prophesy, and I've never denied that. And all the time, because she's to be the glory of man all of the time. And so we see, when we look closely at the context, that it starts out referring to her, makes an argument for 9 verses that a woman is to have a covering without specifically identifying it, but mentioning or making reference to her 4 times, ask a question about her being covered, and answers with long hair. And if that does not prove the proposition, that will show you what.
Mr. Jenkins started his speech by telling us about the main focus of the passage and how that determines what you believe about the covering. And I suppose with most of that I agree. I'm not sure I agree with every single detail, but things that if I did that I disagreed with, I don't think was germane to this discussion. He says that Pat says the main focus is the covering, and then I say that the main reason for the covering given is his objection. And Mr. Jenkins says, I think he agrees with part of that, but then he says, that he thinks that subjection is the main focus. Well, I guess we disagree on that. That's just a hair of disagreement between us. But it doesn't really prove anything one way or the other. Whatever you think the main focus is of the passage, we both agree that subjection is involved. It does not tell you what the covering of 1 Corinthians 11 verse 5 is, and whether or not that's the same covering as 1 Corinthians 11 verse 15, and that's the question tonight. I want to point out before I start, something I pointed out one time last night, but I would have liked to have pointed it out more. Tommy, don't put the chart yet. And that is that in Mr. Jenkins' position, if you look at 1 Corinthians 11, verses 4 and 5, you see this phrase, praying or prophesying, or praying to prophesy. I may not have the right form of it. But Mr. Jenkins' position is that the long hair is the covering talked about the whole time through the passage. Now, my main proof last night to try to show 2 different coverings was the long hair is a permanent covering, but this phrase, praying for prophesied, in verses 4 and 5, shows that that's a temporary covering, therefore there are 2 different coverings talked about. One temporary, for the occasion of praying and prophesying, and one permanent, verse 15, the long hair. Now, according to Mr. Jenkins' view, if the long hair is through, all the way through, I maintain that the phrase, pray or prophesy, has no significance whatsoever. Why did Paul say praying or prophesying in verse 4? It does not make any difference, as my opponent in fact contends. According to his view, there is no real significance to these phrases in verses 4, 5, and 13. His view would be taught just as well as if verse 4 left out the phrase praying or prophesying and just said every man having his head covered dishonoreth his head. And in verse 5 left out the phrase praying or prophesying and it just said but every woman with her head uncovered dishonoreth her head. If that was a long hair, those verses could read like that. It would still be the same position. His view would be the same if he left out the word pray in verse 13 and just said, judging yourselves comely than a woman be uncovered. So you just leave those phrases out and his view still would be the same. In other words, with his view being true, there's no significance to these phrases. And I think I should tell you something right there. There is a significance to those phrases, so the Lord wouldn't have put them in there. And the very significance of those phrases proves that the covering, the cataclysmo covering, is a different covering. You can throw those phrases out, and Mr. Jenkins' position would be taught just as well. But when you put the phrases in, like Paul did, then my position is not only clue to, it's proven. And we'll say more about that in a moment. Tommy put it number 47. The first argument I believe he made in favor of his position that the long hair is the only covering talked about in the passage was, and in verse 13 a question is asked about the covering, and I may not say it exactly the way you do, but and then the answer is given with the long hair. But that does not prove that the long hair is the covering talked about in the first part of the passage, because the question is not, in verse 13, what is the covering? And then Paul tells that the covering is the long hair. That's not the question. The question is, should a woman pray uncovered? Should a woman pray uncovered? Paul's answer is no. And then he gives an argument in favor of that covering, which I believe is the veil. But the argument in favor of the covering does not name the covering of the first part of the passage necessarily. That's just an assumption. But it's an argument for that covering. It's an argument for that covering. And he wants me to explain the switch, and I'll try to do that, I guess, right now, or after this chart, number 46. Number 46, Tommy. First of all, I want to point out something that Mr. Jenkins said, and I want you to have 45 ready. Tommy, that's why I gave those numbers in there. First of all, I want to point out that Mr. Jenkins, in answering one of my questions previous to the first debate, agreed with me that 1 Corinthians 11, verse 15 does not teach that the long hair is the only covering. Now, going into these discussions with him, I would have thought, if there's anything in that passage that would teach the long hair is the covering of the whole passage, it'd be verse 15. After all, it is the verse that says her hair is given to her for a cover. And I can see that somebody might look at that, not knowing that there were two different Greek words used, might look at that and think that that covering was the covering all the way through. But I would have said, if that verse does not teach it, then nothing does. And I still believe that. And Mr. Jenkins agrees with me that that verse does not teach it. If verse 15 doesn't prove it, obviously nothing will. This verse, verse 15, only proves that the long hair is a covering. It is only misfortune to say that the covering of verse 15 is the same covering as we find in verse 5. He can't prove that. There's no way to prove that the covering of verse 15 is the same as the one in verse 5. The only thing that you can see clearly from verse 15 is that the long hair is a covering. That does not prove that it's the same covering as verse 5. It doesn't prove that. And Mr. Jenkins admits that. Notice this. Raise it up. My question for him is number 6. Does 1 Corinthians 11, 15 by itself teach conclusively that the hair is the only covering necessary for a woman? Mr. Jenkins' answer was no. Now, verse 15 does not teach that long hair is the only covering. What verse does? And we'll get into this discussion more, but Mr. Jenkins has already admitted. Also, that the fact that long hair or hair is mentioned 7 times in the passage does not prove the long hair is the covering. He's also admitted that verse 5 does not prove that the long hair is the only covering. He's also admitted that verse 6 does not prove that the long hair is the only covering. Well, I don't want to know what's left. Now, I'm not asking him and saying you have to have it one verse. No, I'm asking him for the argument that Paul makes to prove it. It might take 2 or 3 verses to prove it, but you can't just say, well, the whole context or the tenor of the passage teaches it. You've got to show something in the passage that proves it. Not just something that gives you the clue that it might be. You've got to show us something that proves it, an argument that Paul makes that proves it. Okay? Tommy put up number 45. He asked me to show the switch. Now, I'm going to put up a chart up here. Mr. Jenkins, walk down to the top. This is a chart entitled 1 Corinthians 11, 13 through 15, explained. And this is by a fellow, these words are by a fellow named Henry Alfred. And I want to make it clear to you, Mr. Jenkins, I'm only using him because I like his words. I don't believe he proves anything by his commentary. And I don't believe this proves my position at all. It does not prove my position. But I happen to like Mr. Alfred's words and think he could get a better job of explaining than I could. I'm not that good of a speaker or writer, but he can do a better job than me. And I don't want to put him up here and just quote him word for word without giving his name, because that would bore on plagiarism. I don't think that proves my position, the fact that some there said, I just think that this helps explain verses 13 through 15 and how it could jive with my view that there are two coverings called in the passage. You know, notice what Mr. Alfred said about verses 13 through 15. But if this be acknowledged to be shameful, that is the cutting off the hair, let the further decency of the additional covering be continued likewise. You see, it's a consistency argument, just like verses 5 and 6. That's when he was commenting upon verses 5 and 6, as a matter of fact. And down here he's commenting upon verses 13 through 15. That is, the mere fact of one sex being by nature unveiled, that is having short hair, that is man. The other, the woman veiled, that is having long hair, this plainly declares that man was intended to be uncovered, woman covered. When therefore we deal with the proprieties of the artificial state of clothing the body, we must be regulated by nature's suggestion. That which she has indicated to be left uncovered, we must so leave. That which she has covered, when we clothe the body, we must cover likewise. No, he's just explaining verses 13 through 15. He's showing why he believes the natural covering, the long hair, shows us why the woman ought to have the artificial covering when she prays. Okay? I don't think this proves it. I think the praying and prophesying proves it. But you asked me to show the switch, and I think this fellow explains it better than I could. Now, this is a reasonable explanation for the passage. I don't think it proves my position, but I believe it's a reasonable explanation. And the way you have to prove your position, this is always the way you have to prove your position, is you have to state your position and prove it in such a way that you rule out all other reasonable explanations. Mr. Jenkins will not be able to rule out this reasonable explanation for verses 13 through 15. Therefore, he cannot prove his position. He cannot prove his position until he rules out this reasonable explanation. Now, I believe that I can prove my position by the phrase praying or prophesying in verse 4, 5, and the phrase praying in verse 13. Number 11. Let me put up an argument which I entitled the consistency argument, and this will do further explain my position on verses 13 through 15. I believe that Paul is doing in verses 13 through 15 the same thing he's doing in verses 4, 5, and 6. Paul is proving one thing based upon something else that the Corinthians already knew, admitted to, or agreed to. Now here in this column, we have the things that the Corinthians already admitted. Verse 5, they admitted that shaven was wrong. Verse 6, they admitted that shorn or shaven was wrong. You remember he said basically being uncovered on a woman was just as bad as being shaven, or just as bad as being shorn or shaven. And so this is the thing that was already admitted by the Corinthians. And then in verse 13 through 15, you'll see that Paul is appealing to what the Corinthians already admitted. Not having long hair. Number 11. They already admitted that not having long hair was wrong. They already admitted that. Now over here, what was Paul trying to teach? He was trying to teach based upon their admission. You remember last night I gave an illustration. You take a fellow that's cheating on his taxes and doesn't think it matters. You say, now look, that's just as bad as robbing a bank. Now he already admits that robbing a bank is wrong, and you're trying to show him one's just as bad as the other, so to speak. So you take something he already admits to and use that to prove something he does not agree to already to try to get him to see that the thing he doesn't agree to is incorrect. So Paul takes the fact that they already admitted that shaving on a woman is wrong and says, hey, uncovered is just as bad. It's wrong too. Then Paul took the fact they believed that shorn or shaving was wrong and says, hey, uncovered is just as bad as that. It's wrong too. And then in verses 13 through 15, he's doing the very same thing. They admitted that not having long hair was wrong. And Paul said, hey, being uncovered is wrong too, just as bad as that. Now, what does that show from the passage? Not only does it explain the passage, it indicates the true position of the passage. Raise it up. No, just leave it there. I'm sorry, you see that too. When you see and say somebody that uncovered is just as bad as shaven, that means that uncovered and shaven are two different things. Mr. Jenkins will agree with that. When you say that uncovered is just as bad as shorn or shaven, that indicates that uncovered and shorn or shaven are two different things. Cheating on your taxes is just as bad as robbing the bank. That shows that they're two different things, but one is just as bad as the other. Now we see that this is just as bad as that. That's Paul's argument. So that shows that uncovered and not having long hair are two different things. Otherwise, it wouldn't make any sense for him to appeal to the fact that he already admitted that not having long hair was wrong, and then say, uncovered is just as bad as that. Now we know, look at this. Uncovered is different than shaven, uncovered is different than shorn or shaven, and uncovered is different than not having long hair. In other words, covered is different than long hair. I want to know why, if this is true, Mr. Jenkins, and this is true, Mr. Jenkins, why is it this point true? In other words, verses 13 through 15 actually show that the covering mentioned in verse 13 is different than the long hair, because he appealed to something they already admitted to, that is, that the woman ought to have long hair, to show something they didn't admit to, that the woman ought to have be covered. That shows that this covering is not the long hair. In all three cases, Paul is trying to prove something, truth A, the covering, based upon something they already know, admitted, or agreed to, truth B, the fact that they already ought to have long hair. That shows that truth A is not equal to truth B. Covered in verse 13 is not equal to long hair of verse 15. You ought to be able to see that. He makes a consistency argument. In verses 5 and 6, he's doing this with the hair. By the way, he's doing the same thing in verses 13 through 15. He appeals to something in verses 13 through 15 they already agreed to. He says,
Does not even nature itself teach you? Then indicates that it was something they already agreed to, admitted to.
Matter of fact, he used a different word for the word covering in verse 15 than he had all the way throughout the passage. That should be some kind of indication along those lines.
We'll let Mr. Jesus deal with that. I believe that the argumentation of Paul in verses 13 through 15 not only doesn't prove your position, it's actually showing that there are two different coverings in the passage. Now, you asked for where he did the switch, and I believe that adequately explains it.
All right? And then he went back very quickly to verses 5 and 6, and Pat admitted, I don't remember the exact words, about, basically, I admit that if you look at verses 5 and 6, the consistency argument is used there. Basically, in verse 5, when he says that being uncovered for a woman is even all one as if she were shaven, that's a consistency argument. We've been talking about that. In other words, he's saying that's just as bad as if a woman is shaven. That's a consistency argument. Verse 6, he basically says, the woman being uncovered, when she prays or prophesied, that's just as bad as if she were shorn or shaven. It's a consistency argument. I believe that both his position and my position, the long hair and the veil, will both fit that position. In other words, Paul could be saying, I'm talking about the consistency argument, Paul could be saying that if you're not going to have long hair, that's just as bad as if you were to have shorn or shaven hair. Okay? Paul could be saying that, and that makes sense. One's just as bad as the other. Because when you say one thing is as bad as the other, the main thing that you can see from that and prove from that is that this is not the same as this. And long hair is not the same as shorn or shaven. Okay? And having less than long hair, I will go along with that in this discussion, is not the same thing as shorn or shaven. But also the veil is not the same thing as shorn or shaven. So he could be saying, if you're not going to have the veil when you pray or prophesy, then that's just as bad as if you're shorn or shaven. You see, both positions fit that. Both positions fit that, but there's one thing his position won't fit, and that is this phrase, praying or prophesying, in verse 4, verse 5, and the phrase, pray, in verse 13. We went into develop that point in detail last night, and as we have time, we're going to try to develop it in this speech and the following speeches tonight. Okay? And then he brought up Mark 11, 25. Put up chart number 7. Mark 11, 25, everybody turn to that. Now, he thinks he has a parallel passage in Mark 11, 25, that's sticking long hair in 1 Corinthians 11, verse 5. But no, really, Mark 11, verse 25 is parallel to sticking the covering or the veil into 1 Corinthians 11, verse 5. And I'm going to show you why. It says in verse 25, when you stand praying, forgive. And if you have aught against any, that your Father also, which is in heaven, may forgive you your trespass. Remember my argument last night was the fact that they were told to be veiled or covered in 1 Corinthians 11, 5, the fact that they were told to be covered when they prayed or prophesied the woman indicated that that covering was a temporary covering, that it could be put on for the occasion of praying or prophesying and taken off later. Okay? And that does not fit the long hair. You can't do that. I believe that this phrase, when you stand praying, in verse 25 of Mark 11, shows the very same thing. When it says, and when you stand praying, forgive, that again shows that forgiveness, when you forgive something, is something that you can do on an occasion. As a matter of fact, I believe you ought to do it on every occasion a brother repents. Both of them, both phrases, praying or prophesying, or when you stand praying, show that the thing that follows, the thing they're exhorted to do, can happen on an occasion. And I have a question for Mr. Jenkins tonight that I believe that will show that. And I ask him this question, and I don't have it on the chart, so you'll need to listen carefully. Is it possible for a person, John, to forgive another, Bill, on an occasion, such as when Bill repents, Luke 17, 3 through 4, and not forgive Bill on another occasion, such as when Bill refuses to repent? He said, yes. You see, he said, is it possible to forgive on one occasion when they repent, and not possible to forgive on another? That's not true of the long hair. Stick the long hair in Mark 11, verse 25, and see if it makes any sense. Stick the long hair in Mark 11, 25, see if it makes any sense. And when you stand praying, have long hair. That didn't make any sense, because you can't have long hair just for the occasion of when you stand praying. But you can forgive on that occasion. You can forgive on that occasion. You see that, Mr. Jenkins? And in 1 Corinthians 11, 5, that's my whole point. I hope you can understand that. If you look at 1 Corinthians 11, 5, you can see it for yourself. And he'll take you to all these other passages trying to show you little details, and each one I'm going to turn to an answer and show that it does not negate my position. But if you'll just look at it simply, it's easy for everybody in the audience to see. When you look at 1 Corinthians 11, verse 5, it says, every woman that prayeth or prophesies with her head uncovered, you can see that covering must be talking about a temporary covering. Or it wouldn't make any sense for him to say they ought to have it when the woman prays or prophesies. If it was the long hair, he wouldn't need to say that. It'd already be there. It'd be on there permanently, all the time. The fact that Paul said, do it for this occasion, proves that it can be done for this occasion. Otherwise, that verse just does not make any sense. Now, that argument is going to fail. How? Because the long hair will not fit that. The long hair cannot be done just fornication. We developed that point last night. We'll try to do our very best to do it more tonight. Then he went to the argument that he did last night about the reason equals the why. The reason equals the why. Now, he did it last night that the reason does not always equal the why. Because I pointed out about the illustration about the woman, and this is just custom, not in the Bible. Put up number 70 very quickly. I talked about the illustration of the woman wearing a white dress at the wedding. It represents her virginity. Custom and tradition does that. The Bible never says to do that. But custom does. Well, what's the reason for that white dress? Virginity, purity. How long is she supposed to be a virgin? All the way from birth till marriage. Well, according to Mr. Jenkins' reasoning, that would show that she has to wear the white dress all the way from birth to marriage. No, the reason does not equal the why. It does not coincide with the why. She has a symbol of that virginity. The virginity lasts all that time, but the symbol is only used at her wedding. Okay? We'll talk more about this, I guess. I'm just running out of time. Raise it up. For example, the purpose for the Lord's Supper is to remember Christ's death. We're to remember Christ's death, though, daily, or maybe even more often than that. According to that reasoning, the reason and the why have to coincide, which he admitted last night they don't have to, but according to that reasoning, we would eat the Lord's Supper every day. You see that? But the reasoning does not always coincide with the why. He admitted that last night. And he admitted it in his question tonight that the reason does not coincide with the why in 1 Corinthians 11. In other words, he does not believe that the reason, subjection to man, and the why are always the same. I mean, the when. He's saying reason, why. The reason and why are the same thing. The reason and the when. Let me read this question very quickly. I asked him, if a woman shaved her head and then truly repented of it, could she be in subjection to man without having long hair? He said yes. And when he did that, he admitted that the reason does not equal the when, or does not coincide with the when, in 1 Corinthians 11. Because here you have a woman that's in subjection to man, she's fulfilling the reason, but she does not have the wind. She does not have the long hair, the symbol. She doesn't have the long hair, which is a symbol of subjection. And so, the wind of the covering does not equal the why of the covering. He admits that. She does not have the long hair, even though she's in subjection to man.